The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
So when Shariputra arrived, he knew that there would be a lot of fear here. And it's one of the four big sufferings that we have in our life. Dying is a big fear. We're afraid of suffering. We're afraid of sickness. We're afraid of all the old age, all the losses, the inevitable losses that come with old age. Those are three, I'm sorry, the real sufferings of this life. And then there are so many self-created sufferings. Doesn't mean they're not suffering just because they're self-created. Everybody has them. Fear of failure, fear of disapproval, fear of a group turning against us. Fear of, so much fear is happening right now in our country. So fear is the basis for all of our suffering. It may take different manifestations like hatred, anger, vengefulness, jealousy, all that, but it's all based on fear. And we all have fear, I'm assuming. I have fear. So, and we all have had fear all of our lives. And we all have some wisdom about how to calm our fears, how to live with our fears. And fear comes and goes. So Shariputra came to Ananta Pindika and sat at his side and saw that he was in a lot of pain and a lot of fear. And he tried several methods to calm his fear. So you can see how these feel for you, if they would help you. The first thing he tried was he guided him to become embodied, to rest in his body. Mindfulness of the body, you could say. So we could try that now. Being aware of your body. Being aware of your feet, your thighs. Your calves, your legs, the seat on your chair. And relax. Be aware of your belly, your breathing. Be aware of your lower back, middle back, upper back. Becoming embodied, calming the mind by dropping the mind into the body, relaxing the shoulders, the upper arms and lower arms, and hands. Aware of the hands, the fingers, And if the mind drifts off that, well, that's okay. That's what the mind does. That's what we're thinkers. So just be aware of that. And the moment you're aware of that, just like that, you're back. And relax. You might want to take a deep breath and just relax. Open up to the body, relaxing the shoulders. The throat, and letting your this wonderful awareness, like the sun, shine on your face. And melting all the muscles on your face, all the facial muscles, the jaw, the eyes, behind the eyes, the brain, the forehead, top of the head, back of the head, and then just relax and be aware of the entire body. And maybe that'll calm your fear. That's what he's trying to do. He's trying to help Anathapindika. And then the second thing he did, the second guidance after Anathapindika became embodied, was to think about all the people all through his life and now who love him and who've loved him. So if you'd like to try that, you know, just think about so many people, you know, when we were kids playing with, you know, your friends, they loved you, and you know, in their own kid way. And you love them. Maybe teachers, you had teachers, or if you went to camp, maybe your counselor. Certainly the kids at camp, the kids you played with. And friends, you know, in high school and all this, all through your life, you've had friends that have loved you. Maybe not a perfect love, but it's love, you know. And maybe now somebody loves you. Maybe not a perfect love all the time, but there's love. So let that, all this love that you've experienced in your life, and all the love that you've had for them, all the love you've had for those kids, and for your mentors, your grandkids maybe, and how your grandkids love you if you have grandkids, they're so sweet. And your kids, all the people, just think of it, all the people you love, all the love you have, and bathe in that love. That was his second suggestion to Anathapindika. So let's just maybe rest in that just for a minute or so and bathe in some memories of love. The love that came to you. The love you've had. The love you have now, the love that's coming to you now. and relax into that love and bathe in that love. Let it permeate you and pervade your entire being. All the love. Someone fell in love with you at maybe a couple of times. And again, it was maybe mixed with other stuff. But still, it was like, wow, someone saw me for the first time and you fell in love. We all have this. And does this calm your fear? And Anathapindika, fortunate, he was so fortunate. He had an angel right by his side, Shariputra, loving him, radiating this incredible, magnificent Buddha love for him. And then Anathapindika thought of the Buddha and his love for the Buddha and the Buddha's love for him. Okay, so, and then the third guidance that Shariputra had for him was to think of all the good he had done. So you can do that. Think of all the good, all the kindness. We are so kind here. We are just innately kind, and it manifests every day, all the time. And it comes to us every day, all the time, in little ways, in big ways. People are kind to us. We're kind to them for no reason, just kind. So think about that. Reflect on your own kindness, your own goodness. You know, he did big things, you know, and he gave him this Jetta Grove, and you know, he had a lot of goodness to reflect on, all the charity, all the generosity. Well, we have it too. We have that same generosity. We live in a realm of kindness. So thinking about that, thinking of your goodness, your kindness, does that help you calm your fear? Well, it did with Anathapindika. He smiled. He smiled. And Shariputra knew that the first part of his job was done. He had calmed his fear. Maybe this is the most important thing we can do for ourselves sometimes. Or maybe a lot of the time. Becoming embodied. Being compassionate, being kind, being loving. Accepting. Recognizing all the love around you. Sometimes some people who are givers have a hard time recognizing all the love that's coming to them. Okay, so that was done. He was relaxed. His heart was open. And by the way, let's open our hearts now to, may this be a benefit, our meeting today, in this meditation today, in this contemplation. May it ripple out and be kind now. May it help my loved ones. May what's happening to me now, my opening my heart, be a benefit to the next person I see after this meeting, or the vibes that we're feeling in this meeting together, may it be a benefit. May my love, my kindness be a benefit to all of you, and your kindness taking it in to benefit me. So, and then he moved on to, because he was dying, you know, he was going to be dead pretty soon. And so to move into his final dying process and his death process, he guided him to see the unconditioned. So a lot of our practices have to do with the conditioned. So these practices that he did with him, which we'll do, were contrasting our conditioned experiences with the unconditioned, a contrast, like going back and forth and back and forth and back to familiarize with the unconditioned. So that might sound a little weird, mysterious, but it's not mysterious at all, you'll see. It's what we do all the time when we do the four foundations of mindfulness. It's exactly the same thing. But the point here is to familiarize with the wide open empty space of awareness, because that's what he will take into his death, when his body disintegrates, when his mind disintegrates, when his eyesight disintegrates with it. So let's go back to being aware of our body. And feel your body. You might do a brief body scan again, the face, the shoulders, the arms, the hands, the front of the torso, the back of the torso, the legs. And be aware of the entire body. And let the aperture of awareness widen. And be aware of the space around the body, above the body, below the body. And then ask yourself the question. This is a very traditional ancient Buddhist technique that has been done through many spiritual traditions, investigation or analysis. This is a wisdom. He did a love, compassion, guidance. Now this is a wisdom guidance. Who is aware of the body? There's the body, there's the breath, there are the hands. Who is aware? Who's aware of the hands, for example? Who's aware of the breath? Or maybe it's clearer to ask, where is the awareness? Where is the awareness? Can you find it? I'm aware of my legs. Where is the awareness of the legs? Where is the awareness of the throat? Is it in the throat? Where in the throat? And if it's in the throat, where's the awareness of the face? Who is aware? What is aware? Is it, some people say it's in the head, but where in the head? Is it in the eyes or the prefrontal cortex or the, or other sections of the brain? The jaw, the lips, where in the head? It's like, you know, trying to find it. It's like sand running through your fingers. You just can't find it. So then just rest in that not finding. Just rest in awareness, which is unfindable, ungraspable. And all you have to do is just simply just be, just perfect as you are. You can't do this wrong. Just rest without making any effort to improve or reject, get rid of anything. Just be. Rest in awareness. And then he went through all the other senses, which we won't do, but just briefly. Am I my eyes? Am I my ears? Am I what I'm tasting? Am I the taster? And the response is, I'm not limited to that. I'm limitless. I'm not limited to the body. I'm not limited to appearance, what I see. I'm not limited to what I hear. I am boundless. So this is contrasting the conditioned and the unconditioned. And then we all have all these thoughts, millions of thoughts. So be aware of your thoughts if you can. Thoughts are shy. Once we try to be aware of them, they run away. But otherwise, we're thinking so much. And then, am I my thoughts? I'm aware of my thoughts. And Where? Who is aware? Where is the awareness of thoughts? Who is aware? And who's doing the looking, by the way? Where is the looker? And he did this with emotions, feelings, with fear. There's the fear, the feeling. And there's the awareness of the fear. Where is the awareness? And then just rest in the unfindability. And just in the interest of time, I won't go through the others so thoroughly, but just, what is the past? The past is thought. We ruminate about the past. Sometimes feel bad about the past. What is the past? It's memory. What is the future? Does the future exist? It's all in the mind. It's the future is a fantasy, a projection. And what is the present? The present is just as ungraspable. You can't grasp the present. The moment you try to grasp the present, it's gone. All you can do is rest in it. And then the final contemplation was where did what is arising right now come from? Thoughts, feelings, sensations, sights, everything. Where did the appearances that are arising right now, this very moment, come from? Were they actually born from somewhere? And no, they're unborn. This is a word that's used over and over and over in the sutras, unborn. We are unborn. This present moment is unborn, and it never dies. Where does it dissolve into? Where does it go? And another word that's used often in the sutras is deathless. This moment is unborn. I am unborn. I am deathless. Awareness is unborn. Awareness is deathless. And when Anatta Pindaka got this insight, this final insight, he broke into tears. Something deep within him was released. So let's rest in that just for a moment or two, just the unborn and deathless nature of this experience right now. And just relaxing into that. Resting. Just resting. Nothing to do. Nothing to achieve. Nothing to reject. Just be. And you might feel some ease in just being, some contentment, some dissolution of fear. Your home. Effortless being, natural, limitless, boundless, and you can, whenever you're ready, you could open your eyes. And thank you very much for your meditation today. And now we can go into some small groups and talk about these things. What helped you? Those are very, we tried a couple of practices. Did feeling love, you know, all the love that's come to you and the love that you have given. Did that help you? Did thinking of all the good things you've done and all the kindnesses that are given to you, does that help you? Or how do you help others? And you know, if you've sat with someone who's dying, how has your presence helped them? Just your warm presence. And can this same presence that you bring to someone who's dying. Can you bring that same presence to yourself and help yourself with that? Or can you bring that same kind of presence to someone who's not dying, who's living? And then these practices, these, call them emptiness practices. How was that for you? What was your experience? So anything you'd like to discuss about these things or anything else that you'd like to talk about, just feel free. You're welcome to talk about your practice or what's inspiring you or what's challenging you. Okay. So, see if I've got enough groups. Okay, here we go. Wait a second. Maybe that's too many. Yeah, that should be good. Okay, there you go. And so enjoy your conversations.
David?
Yeah.
You should mute everyone so that we don't hear the...
Oh, yeah.
Hi, everyone. And for those of you who don't know me, I'm Robert Cusick. And I share this time with all of you and with David and Fiona. We've been doing this for quite a while. And it's a great pleasure. So... The world that we live in is pretty tense today, it seems, and it can be challenging for all of us. So I'd like to invite you to think about your own experience over the last few weeks and try to recall any moments that you can remember where you've had a sense or a feeling of gratitude or a feeling of joy or maybe a feeling of contentment, especially a feeling of kindness that you were aware of since we met here last month. I'll give you just a minute to do that. Just try to recall any feeling of kindness that or experience of that you had of kindness or contentment. Gratitude, appreciation, joy, anything like that. We can give ourselves the gift of, this is what David was talking about so beautifully, we can give ourselves the gift of noticing and acknowledging those moments and things or encounters with others that awaken a feeling of kindness or gratitude or a sense of, you know, courage or bravery meeting a moment of fear. Sometimes we have a sense of release. So I'm going to try to make time for you to share some of those moments that you're recalling or that you recalled with each other a little bit later. So I want to build a little bit on David's theme. It'll be kind of following, not the exact same thing, but I want you all to pause right now again and just bring awareness to the compassion and the kindness that actually surrounds us right now, right here. And you can begin to do that by directing your attention to the kindness that's already been expressed with one another and in the large room, the kindness that actually fills this virtual Sangha and is a blessing to each one of us that's assembled here today. So take this opportunity to just look around the screen and look at the faces of your Dharma friends. This is your community. This is a community that we co-create each month. It's a real gift for all of us, not just for those of you who come, but for David and for Fiona and for myself. It's a real gift to us. This is your beautiful Sangha. This is our beautiful Sangha. Look and see the humanity and the basic goodness in everyone that's here. And this is important. I want you to know that the reason you can recognize and connect to that sense of basic goodness in everyone here is because it exists in you. If it didn't already exist in you, you wouldn't be able to recognize it in others. So I'd like to begin again with a beautiful short poem that some of you surely already know or will recognize. And I've shared this poem here with this Sangha before, but it's so beautiful, it's worth sharing again. And it's called St. Francis and the Sow. And it goes like this. The bud stands for all things, even those things that don't flower. For everything flowers from within of self-blessing. Though sometimes it is necessary to reteach a thing its own loveliness, to put a hand on its brow of the flower and tell it in words and in touch, it is lovely. Until it flowers again from within of self-blessing. As St. Francis put his hand on the creased forehead of the sow and told her, in words and in touch, blessings of the earth on the sow. And the sow began remembering all down her thick length, from the earthen snout all the way through the fodder and slops to the spiritual curl of the tail, from the hard spininess spiked out from the spine, down through the great broken heart, to the sheer blue milken dreaminess spurting and shuddering from the 14 teats into the 14 mouths sucking and blowing beneath them, the long, perfect loveliness of sow. So sometimes we just need to stop. We just need to pause and remember how to tell ourselves in words and in touch that we're worthy until our own loveliness flowers again from within as an insight and a self-blessing. We cover ourselves up with layers and layers of protection. Our goal, I think, when we do this is to protect ourselves from harm or loneliness or loss. But in the process and over time, we do forget our true luminous nature of friendliness and kindness. So I want to encourage you, please don't forget or diminish your own true nature and innate capacity to be kind to yourself and to those around us. So as a way of shining the light of compassion and loving kindness on us, I want to paraphrase another wonderful teacher that I've mentioned before, Thomas Merton, the great modern Christian mystic, who's known to have said something along the lines of, if we knew who we really are, we would all fall down and worship at one another's feet. I hear this phrase and my heart leaps with a sense of joy. But the truth is there any easy way of telling people that we're all walking around shining like the luminous sun? Or would people think that we were crazy? So the question that I ask myself, and we might ask ourselves, is how in the swirl of our own lived experience can we cultivate and nourish the practice of kindness and compassion for ourselves and for others? Now, David gave us a number of very skillful ways that we can do that kind of work or cultivate that kind of practice. And in the ebb and flow of our lives, your life and mine, it's not only important what we pay attention to, but it's important how we pay attention. That statement that I just made, it's not important, it's not only important to what we pay attention to, but how we pay attention. That statement can trigger all manner of reactions in our mind. But it's meant, the way I mean it, is more as a prompt to inspire curiosity and a willingness to investigate our own experience, not to judge ourselves. And doing this really doesn't require a PhD in rocket science. For instance, we can consciously choose to dial down the volume on our inner critic, along with all the endless monologues and narratives that we fill our life with, that's so much a part of our life, that's really unacknowledged judgment and self-criticism. The inner critic thinks it's being helpful, but it's really, it can really be torturous. So we can consciously choose to be more attentive to what we speak out loud. This is a way of working in a skillful way to see what's actually occurring as it occurs. So I was with someone yesterday, and I'll just share this experience. I was with someone yesterday and they made a comment, and I was trying to find something on my iPhone. And sometimes I get stuck trying to do something on my iPhone or my laptop, and I blurt out, quote, "Sometimes I really hate technology." Now, that seems like a simple and innocent enough thing to say, but that utterance, an unrecognized moment of aversion, is an attitude that makes my day a whole lot harder than it needs to be. You see? And it also activates neuronal activity in my brain that reinforces the belief that technology was invented just to aggravate me, until it actually becomes a kind of a default reaction to a moment of mere frustration, to an unrecognized moment of aversion. So I can't be aversive and kind in the same mind moment. So simply becoming aware of what's happening and how we're interacting with it or how we're relating to it can determine the experience that we might be having. So we can actually learn in very, very simple and pragmatic ways to be kinder to ourselves. We can learn to remove the buildup of unexamined beliefs and layers of protections that we pack onto ourselves by incorrectly thinking that we can shield and insulate ourselves from loneliness or frustration or loss or harm, even. That life is somehow giving us the short end of the stick. All we accomplish by thinking that way is covering over and losing connection to our true, really luminous nature, which naturally expresses as kindness, also as friendliness. Think about it. If we can't be kind to ourselves, why do we nevertheless still expect and want others to be kind to us? Just as there are many roads to Rome or paths up the mountaintop, there too are many ways of cultivating kindness. So one way, which is familiar and available to all of us as practitioners and meditators, is the practice of metta, or loving kindness, which helps us to be better friends to ourselves and to one another. Metta helps us recognize and see that our true nature really is genuine caring and kindness. It helps us to truly appreciate our shared wish for happiness. We all want to be happy, and recognize that below our thoughts and our beliefs and our behaviors, no one of us wants to suffer. How many times have we heard this? It's because it's universally true. Even people whose behavior is toxic or mean-spirited, who really behave badly, even those people believe that their behavior will somehow make the world a safer and more secure place for them. It's mixed up thinking, but nonetheless, that's what's at the root of it. They mistakenly believe at some level that if they can just control or manipulate the way life unfolds, that they will find happiness and safety, and that they will find the freedom from fear that we all long to experience. Unfortunately, that's not the case. Their confused and limited understanding, their wrong view about things, more often than not creates a mess of commotion and turmoil in the lives of others, and it imprisons them in the tangle of greed and aversion and delusion. So at the level of our common humanity, below our individual narratives and stories and all the details of our unique and wonderful diversity, below all of that, we all essentially want to feel connected to others, part of, included, and cared about. Just think about your own experience. I think it's fair to say, like David has said in the past, and certainly it's true, that at the core of our humanity, we all want the same thing, to love and to be loved. And this is a wholesome desire, and it doesn't diminish just because we get older and we age. Think about your own experience. Your own experience. Do you want, now that you're older, do you really not want to be loved just as much as you wanted to be loved when you were younger? I don't know. I certainly don't. I certainly do want to be loved that way. So this simple practice of loving kindness, or the practice of kindness, just kindness for ourselves and for others, connects us to this beautiful intention and heartfelt wish for something that's widely accepted as good and universally desired by all manner of beings, not just humans, animals, dogs, and so on and so forth. And I saw one of you had a dog with you, and I would say the desire and wish to give and receive love. If you don't believe me, check it out with your dog the next time he or she looks up at you. So I'll wrap up my brief comments here this morning by saying it doesn't matter what your current situation is or what state of mind you find yourself in at any moment. It's never too late to connect to what you know deep in your heart to be wholesome and good. The intention and the possibility of living out your days with kindness as your North Star. So, those are my brief but spectacular, this is my brief but spectacular moment, as they say on NPR. And I hope that those thoughts sparked something and inspired something in you. And because we really don't have time to pop into individual breakout rooms, because I want to give Fiona time to also share, maybe we can share as a large group here, as though we were sharing intimately in the smaller group. So I want to just ask I'll give you two prompts, and you can respond to either one of them if you feel moved to do that, and I hope that some of you will. So the first prompt is, what are some ways that help you recognize the actual experience, the embodied experience of kindness in the ebb and flow of your everyday life experience? How do you recognize that embodied feeling? You see? So I gave you an example in the talk of how to recognize the opposite, a moment of aversion, without, you know, I wasn't recognizing it as aversion. I was just saying, oh, I hate technology. It's driving me nuts. You see, it's a moment of aversion. So when I stopped to think about it, I realized what was happening. And it's not the technology that was driving me nuts. It's the aversion that I was experiencing. So by flipping it, how do you recognize a moment of kindness? So that's prompt one. And the other prompt is, what are some ways that help you reteach yourself that you're worthy of kindness until your own loveliness flowers again from within as a self-blessing? How do you connect with that idea that you're truly worthy of kindness? And what I will do here is, let's see if I can pull these prompts up, and I will put it in chat, and then you can refer to them in chat. There you are. So if anybody would like to break the ice, we have a few minutes here. Who has the dog? I saw somebody had a dog with them. Jerry, is it true what I said? When your dog looks up at you, doesn't the dog love you?
Oh, wouldn't it be awesome if we could be the person that our dog thinks we are? You know, that's
dog thinks you are.
Yeah, so let me go ahead and say that recognizing kindness in other people is sometimes there's a Lojong saying, the Buddhists have the one. It's called, It says, when one encounters others, one treats them with gratitude. So if I see them going around what appears to be other people in my world, I'll treat them with gratitude. And if you're grateful to someone, everything they do appears then as a kindness. That you for being here, man, you were kind to show up for me, right? So maybe that's a good way to recognize kindness is to treat others with gratitude.
That is a great Lojong. So that's something to live by too. Thank you, Jerry. What's your dog's name?
Oh, that was Lily that came, and then I have a couple here, but that was Lily.
That was Lily. Okay. Anyone else want to say anything or share anything? I can feel the burning desire. Someone wants to say something here. Don't be shy. Okay. Chris, thank you.
Thanks.
Are speaking up. Come on, ladies.
I know. I already said a lot. I don't want to dominate.
No. Men are generally the ones that sit back. So I'm so happy that you're raising your hands. Come on.
Well, one thing that's sort of ironic, because there's a lot of things going on in the country now and the administration that I really don't approve of, and that seem, to me anyway, from my perspective, to be characterized by a certain amount of cruelty. And oddly enough, or maybe it's not so odd, it has really prompted me to be much more deliberately polite and gentle when I'm dealing with strangers and situations that I might have previously gotten a little bit impatient in, like, you know, on the phone with an insurance person or trying to deal with some kind of, you know, bureaucratic help or some kind of utility that procedure that isn't making sense, or even a stranger who's a little bit abrupt with me. And I just find myself instinctively just wanting to not mirror that impoliteness at all, and just be you know, as much of a paragon of equanimity and kindness that I can be. I'm really aware of it on a day-to-day basis in the most mundane situations. So it's kind of interesting side effect of the situation we're in.
That's really beautiful, because what you're talking about is being with yourself in a kind way and offering that kindness to the world at large, to the people that you encounter. So it's a way of taking something that's challenging for you, which is the feelings that are stirred up in you when you're triggered by what's happening in the world, and looking at them from a much more wise perspective, and allowing this quality of kindness to be what you offer to the world. And in that way, I really do want to say we hear this idea of, you know, one small drop can make a big difference. But people say, what can we do when the circumstances around us are so overwhelming? And what anyone can do at any moment is exactly what you're doing. You see?
I was just going to add, it has also prompted me in this same sort of development. It has prompted me to also acknowledge and remember that in previous circumstances, I have not always been so kind. I might have let impatience creep into my voice, or some annoyance at some bureaucratic snafu. And so it's both the opportunity for improvement in that regard and some self-reflection, and really kind of admitting some of my and this is all very mundane, you know, these are all just the most mundane examples, just dealing with, yeah.
I'm going to say, in the most of ordinary of circumstances, what you're calling mundane can be the most extraordinary insights, real insights of importance. By choosing not to live from a place of aversion, not to express, not to encounter others and yourself in a place of aversion, you change the world in a very real and direct way. We all change the world in a very real and direct way. And we part of the way that we can learn to do that is by seeing what it's like when we are acting out of aversion, because we're suffering in when we're in aversion, we're suffering. So all of the nastiness and all of the ugliness and all of the cruelty that we see in the world at large, and we see the devastation of the climate on the, you know, the plant, the impact of climate change on the planet itself, we see all of that. And when we consciously choose not to deny the reality of that, but to choose not to be part of that, not to let that be our lived experience, we are a powerful force for good in the world. So thank you for sharing that. I really appreciate that.
And Robert, I just want to jump in here for, am I muted?
No, you're not.
I just want to jump in. You know, just this, it's such beautiful shares today. And just want to mention, we have small groups, and that we have these wonderful small groups that meet, and people get very bonded and can really share openly and fully and richly with each other. And these groups stay with each other for years and years. So I just want to invite some of you who are not, there are a lot of you here who are in small groups already, but these meet every other week, and they're really great. So if that interests you, let us know, and we'll communicate about it. And so now.
Okay. Thanks, David. So, gentlemen, thanks for sharing, and thanks for carrying the banner for men who usually hold back in circumstances like this. So you're very brave. I applaud you both. And I want to turn the floor over to our beloved Fiona, and she has some thoughts to share with you here. So Fiona, take it away.
Thank you. I want to thank you both for your sharing this morning, and what you just said, Robert, was just this morning, Gil's morning sharing on YouTube. He's been doing this for years now, and just recently been focusing on the meditation approach of samadhi, which is concentration, real stillness, and openness. Different from our insight practice. But what he just said this morning, which was a few hours ago, was basically this cultivation, what you were saying, Robert, of this kindness inside, it is a gift. It is truly a gift to the world. It's not turning away from the world. It's not spiritual bypass. It's not Pollyanna. It is this deep healing and touching into this potential and inherent goodness that both nourishes us. And then when we step out the door or pick up the phone or call the lawyer about the estate, you know, this problem, that problem, it is our gift. Just being present and not aversive, if we can keep nurturing this wholesomeness in ourselves and how we can then show up. One of our Dharma teachers at IMC, Diana Clark, she's been working with Gil for years now and doing sutta study and the Dharma teachings. But she's also recently been doing Dharma through poetry. And I've so appreciated her sharing. And I would like to share a poem that she gave to a small group a few weeks ago. So let me see if I can do this on the screen. I was so touched by this, and just from my own background, growing up in the Christian tradition and then moving into my Buddha Dharma practice for the last few decades. But I so appreciated the words that this is a poem by a Theravadan nun who is Canadian. She has spent decades in Burma and then continuing her life as a renunciant in England, went back to Taiwan, and I think eventually took full ordination, and she now has a community for nuns in Canada. And I'm saying this because she comes from a Judeo-Western, Judeo-Christian background. And so the words in this poem resonate with our Western tradition, but she is, and her life has been as a monastic for decades now. I loved the combination of her intention of our Buddhist practice, and then the words that she brings to it that are very familiar, at least to me. So, My Religion by Aya Medanandi. To live and die without regret, that is my religion. To taste the cup of the sacrament of this moment, now, my only moment. How otherwise to spend it, for tonight I may die. To abide in the fragrance of goodness in this world, enduring, awake. To bring no harm to myself or anyone. To be a cause of kindness and compassion, a joy that defeats despair. To smile with courage through life's storms and trials, trusting the inherent principle of love. To pray, to live and die a simple way. My Religion by Aya Medanandi. I love the words to live and die without regret and to taste the cup of the sacrament of this moment now, my only moment. And then she says, which is hard, we were talking about, you know, the world can feel very challenging. And she says to abide in the fragrance of goodness in this world, enduring and awake. Earlier in our meeting today, David was recalling this, you know, practice of looking at our own goodness, our own kindness, the goodness and kindness that have come to us over a lifetime, how that can deeply support us and support this connection and recognizing the wholesomeness that's here, regardless of all the other that we can become aware of. Again, it's not turning away, it's waking up and really acknowledging what also is here, what also supports us. If you don't mind, I'll share it again. My Religion. to live and die without regret. That is my religion. To taste the cup of the sacrament of this moment, now, my only moment, how otherwise to spend it? For tonight I may die. To abide in the fragrance of goodness in this world, enduring, awake, to bring no harm to myself or anyone, to be a cause for kindness and compassion, a joy that defeats despair. To smile with courage through life's storms and trials, trusting the inherent principle of love. To pray, to live and die a simple way. Aya Medanandi. I think this call to deeply trust this goodness. Gil the other day was giving a talk, and he used the word, this inner womb of goodness inside of us, this place that nurtures life and beauty and deep compassion for ourselves and others. It's inherent, and it just needs our maybe acknowledgement and nurturing for it to just naturally grow and be expressed. So, David, maybe you'd like to offer whatever you'd like to share with our group today.
Yeah, we can. You can hear me okay?
Yes.
Yeah. That was beautiful, Robert and Fiona. Such beautiful reflections compared to the poetic beauty you've just shared, Fiona. I'll share something that's not quite as poetic, but it's really fun, I think. And this teacher I love, this one teacher, his name is Mingyur Rinpoche. He says, you know, if you're wearing a watch, you can't tell time unless you look at your watch. You have a beautiful watch. It's a Rolex, you know, gold-plated watch. Gold all over it. But you have to look at your watch to tell. You have to look at your nature to know your goodness. You have to look. You have to recognize it. That's all. Just recognize it. You know, we have this abundant love that we that is in us and is expressed from us and to us all the time. But we get caught in this and that, and you know, look at my iPhone, all this stuff, you know, and we forget to look at who we are. So, some people asked about the small groups, and you can write to Fiona. You know, you write to the same person who sent you the emails about today, and we'll get that information to you. And someone asked about Gil's talks, and that's on IMC, the IMC website, Audio Dharma, and all of the talks that are given through IMC are posted there. So, the Buddhas and Bodhisattvas all through time have done, you know, and still today, all the Buddhas and Bodhisattvas, you Buddhas and Bodhisattvas, today, you know, we express at the end of a session, we express our gratitude and dedicate whatever merit, whatever virtue we've changed. There's something in us that's changed today. And it's always changed through some kind of, you know, through study of Dharma, through meditation, and particularly through Sangha. Something changes in us. And then, so that's virtue. You know, we accumulate virtue. And then we dedicate the virtue, not just for me, but to share with all beings everywhere. So the dedication today, I'm going to read this prayer. It's called the Tibetan Windhorse Prayer. And it goes like this. As wind carries our prayers for earth and all life, may respect and love light our way. May our hearts be filled with compassion for others and for ourselves. May peace increase on earth, and may it begin with me. Okay, thank you all so much for coming. I'm mute if you want to say goodbye.
Goodbye, everyone.
Bye.
Wonderful to share this time with you. Thanks, David. Thanks, Fiona.
Thank you, Fiona.
Bye-bye.
Yes.
Well, Sangha.
Beautiful Sangha.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you all.
Bye-bye.
Bye.